Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. A pastor's wife goes missing. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating if you haven't already. You can email us as well, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. We'd love to hear from you as we get through the news of the Cray together each and every weekday, bright and early. Joining me today to get through it, Tregones Phillips and Madison Seals on today's episode of the podcast. And Madison, on the Focus story, we're looking at this new hate crime law in Scotland that's sparking some criticism.
Yeah, well, J.K. Rowling is known for the Harry Potter series, but she's also become known in recent years for her comments on transgenderism and now about challenging this hate crime law in Scotland. So really interesting comments from her.
Yeah, looking forward to the details there. On the main thing coming up, war is still going on throughout Ukraine, but one frontline church is seeing surprising growth. CBN's George Thomas was in Ukraine, and he brings us that report. That'll be on today's main thing. Don't forget to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts, DC Debrief with John Stolness and Newsmakers with Billy Hallowell. You can do so in the links that are in the description of this podcast episode. So you get on over there and do that, and we'll head on over here to the news in 90 seconds. Two women, including the wife of a local pastor, have vanished. Veronica Butler, who's 27, and Jillian Kelly, 39, were last seen over the weekend. They were traveling to pick up children but never arrived. The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation said the women are in danger. Their vehicle was found abandoned in a remote part of the state near the Kansas border. Jillian Kelly is heavily involved in community work and is married to a pastor. Veronica Butler is known for being good with children and enjoys gardening and cooking and baking. Their vehicle was found abandoned near Highway 95 south of Elkhart, Kansas, in rural Texas County. And anyone with information there is urged to contact authorities. Florida Supreme Court issued two major rulings on abortion on Monday, upholding a ban that protects the lives of unborn persons, but also allowing Florida voters to decide this fall whether or not to enshrine abortion protections in the state constitution. In those dual decisions, the court ruled 6-1 that a 15-week limit on abortions is constitutional. It also upholds a stricter law signed by the state legislature last year to protect unborn lives starting at 6 weeks. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out those stories and more over at cbnnews.com. And another story I wanted to hit here, guys, and I ran out of time there in that segment, but this unfortunate and horrible deaths of these international food charity workers. They worked for the World Central Kitchen, and they suspended their operations in Gaza following the deaths of 7 of their workers, and it was due to an Israeli airstrike. Well, that's what everyone's saying. And innocent Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged that Israel's forces hit innocent people. Hamas also blamed Israel for this. And guys, the obvious thing now that we're just so far past October 7th, that people keep saying, you know, they've just kind of almost like forgotten about this. If Hamas would just release the hostages and surrender, this would all be over. This would all be over and things like this wouldn't be happening, yet Israel still gets the blame. Obviously, this is tragic, but it seems like the focus and the proper attention on who's to blame often gets lost.
It reminds me of like when I was a little kid. Obviously, this is a much, much simpler version, a dumbed down version, I think, of what's happening. But it's like your little sister picks on you and drives you insane. And then you finally react and tell her to be quiet or, you know, whatever. And then you're the one that gets in trouble with your parents because you raised your voice at your sister who's been, you know, like pinching you or punching you, like whatever she's been doing to pick on you. Like you're the one that gets in trouble. And that's what we're all doing with Israel on a much, much grander, more dangerous, obviously serious scale. Is Israel is simply reacting to the violence that's been perpetrated on them completely undeservingly. And for whatever reason, we've just decided that it's Israel's responsibility to not retaliate, to just, I guess, roll over, let it happen to them. But the unfortunate thing is that the terrible thing is this stuff is happening, right? More and more people are dying, both in Gaza and in Israel, because Gaza won't stop, because Hamas won't stop, won't take responsibility for what they've done, won't release the hostages, is refusing to back down. They're the problem. They're the perpetrator. They're the ones committing this evil. And yet on the world stage, if you look at any news organization, it's Israel that's the violent aggressor. And that's just the complete opposite of reality. And I don't think anybody's saying either that the Israeli government is perfect in everything that they do. I mean, they make plenty of mistakes, just like any fallible human being is capable of making mistakes. But when the violent aggressor is the one responsible for what's happening, we need to point to them, not to the victim.
Right. Yeah. And I think the reaction from people here in the U.S., kind of this decline in support for Israel that we're seeing, just shows how the narrative has been so controlled and twisted over, you know, the past, since October 7th, just showing how media has twisted it and pro-Palestinian voices have raised concerns. Whether or not they're valid concerns, the priority has shifted to focusing on the actual issue at hand, which is freeing hostages, to these other concerns about people who are unfortunately getting injured or bombed in the process of trying to free the hostages. But the sole purpose should still be to resolve this conflict. And it just shows, you know, this declining in support of Israel, showing this, that the media has really gotten a hold of people's minds and been able to impact that.
Yeah, it really has.
And I also,
yeah, go ahead, Trey.
Well, I was just, the only thing that I was going to add is, for the most part, at least that I've seen, Dan, you might have more details on this, but in just about every instance where IDF has made a mistake or where an IDF target has also hit civilians, Israel has owned up to that. Like, they've acknowledged, like, we made a mistake. This was not the best carried out plan of attack. It wasn't the best retaliation, you know, whatever the situation is. Israel has taken responsibility, and we're not seeing that from Hamas at all.
No. In fact, Hamas goes to great lengths to lie about situations.
Right.
Like we saw with the hospital blast, that there was completely fabricated details on that and numbers of casualties, et cetera. So you see the exact opposite. And, you know, it's unfortunate, obviously, what happened. But again, let's not lose the plot here and realize, okay, this could all be over and these things could be avoided if Hamas would just release these hostages and surrender. Easy solution, but of course, no. In most of the mainstream media is not calling for that too aggressively. But all right, we're going to head over to the focus story now. And a new hate crime law in Scotland is sparking some criticism from around the world, including its own citizens. J.K. Rowling had a daring response. And why is Scotland's new hate crime law here controversial? And what does it cover, Madison?
So it's called the Hate Crime and Public Order Act, and it creates basically a new criminal offense out of the, quote, stirring up of hatred. And those are the words of the act itself. So if someone's convicted under this crime, it carries a penalty of up to 7 years in prison and a fine that's equivalent of up to about $12,500, or both of those things. So you might be thinking, how do you decide what is stirring up hatred or just a disagreement? And the definition given by Police Scotland and the Scottish government doesn't really clarify that much. They define a hate crime as, quote, any crime which is perceived by the victim or any other person to be motivated wholly or partly by malice and ill will towards a social group. So essentially, it's intended to consolidate existing hate crime laws and create a new offense of stirring up hatred on the grounds of age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, transgender identity, and variations in sex characteristics. And the law was actually passed back in 2021, but it's taken an unusually long time to be enforced, after Parliament pushed back with concerns over violating free speech. But it was finally implemented this week on April 1st.
What's the general reaction of British citizens been? I mean, I know they've been subject to a lot of these sorts of things we've covered on this podcast. people praying outside silently outside of abortion clinics, getting cited and fined and arrested and things of that nature. So what's the reaction to this, Ben?
Right. Well, understandably, those initial concerns in Parliament were echoed by British citizens, along with how this bill will actually, or this law will actually be policed. So on the day that the law was implemented, hundreds of people gathered outside the Scottish Parliament to protest. But a lot of the pushback has been on social media, where a lot of the opponents are saying that the law will be used to silence critics of transgenderism and people with conservative beliefs in general on social issues. And one of the biggest critics of the law and transgender-based policies in general is J.K. Rowling, who lives in Scotland. And on April 1st, she addressed this and posted on X, daring the Scottish police to arrest her for calling a list of trans women men. And she also points out in this post how the law doesn't include any additional protections for women, just transgender women. And she's, of course, garnered lots of reactions, both in support and not in support. And Scotland's first minister, not the prime minister, called Rowling and others' concerns disinformation and inaccuracy. But the prime minister had a very different response and came out in support of Rowling, saying that people should not be criminalized for stating simple facts on biology.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, it's common sense. What are some other potential problems with this law?
Well, the general reaction is far from what the prime minister called disinformation, because it's really just a call for more information. People just want to know how this law will be enforced, because how can you enforce something that's objective in nature? So there's a few different points that were made that I think are worth highlighting. Evangelical apologist David Robertson called the new laws crazy and warned that shifting the definition of a hate crime to the perceptions of the supposed victim will help modern Scotland become more of a police state and less tolerant and inclusive. And the Free Speech Union said the act will be a disaster for free speech in the country, pouring more fuel on the raging fire of cancel culture, in their words. And a professor named Adam Tompkins at the University of Glasgow said that a great deal of police time is now likely to be wasted because they'll have to deal with ill-founded complaints made by people who are just offended or upset by something that somebody said. And the Association of Scottish Police Superintendents really echoed this. They said the law will put pressure on an already overstretched force, and they warned that there's already enough anger and hateful comments online to occupy every police officer in Scotland, given the guidelines of this new law. So really, everybody's concerned about how this will redirect attention and focus onto things that can't really be policed accurately. And the Scottish Police Federation even said that their officers haven't received training on how to do this. And they said they literally just took this 2-hour module online.
Yeah. And look, it's I think Twitter proved, Madison, that you can't police speech, the old Twitter, right before Elon Musk. And, you know, essentially, not only is it improper to try to police free speech, as we understand here and value that in America, or at least used to, it's just also impractical. Like, you just, how do you do it? Especially when it's vague like that, and not obvious speech, you know, like things like child pornography or whatever that everyone can agree on. It's, you get into this category where you're like, well, this person's, hey, that's hate speech. You got to shut that down. I don't like it. And then someone else says, well, I don't like this. And then you end up just starting to get into this cycle where you've got to ban everything. And now essentially nothing is left, and you're left with very bland opinions and things, or only the so-called approved opinions. And I think we're proving out in real time. We're seeing what happens when you try to go down that road. It just ends up in a society that's afraid to say things. They're afraid to speak up because they don't want to get censored or shut down or lose their business or get ostracized from society. And in a free speech culture, yes, there will be things you don't like that are said. But at the end of the day, generally what happens is the free market wins out. And then the bad ideas get shunned, and then the good ones rise to the top. And it's worked for hundreds of years in America. And now it's like we're wanting to test this. And now in over there in the UK, they're wanting to try to do the same thing. And it's a fool's errand. It's not going to work out.
Right. Yeah. Technically, police could go after really any Christian who speaks out in support of marriage between a man and a woman, or that there are only two biological genders. And there's bound to be issues when you write something into a law like that that's already disagreed upon. You know that all the Christians there are going to disagree with this policy and are more than likely going to speak out about it because that's part of their faith. It's part of what they believe. So, I mean, that already ostracizes whatever Christians are in the country currently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, also laws like these are laws that are literally saying that it doesn't matter if it's fact. It doesn't matter if there is thousands of years of science to back this up. If you state biological reality, that is hateful. And I think that should be scary to everybody, because if I can't state something that is on its face, like a biological, well understood, removed from ideology, just an understood known fact of life, if I can't say that, how much more likely am I to get in trouble for having a moral or ethical position on something that's in the abstract, right? I can't tether it to science. Like, I can't point to some sort of scientific proof that there's a God, right? I can point to spiritual knowledge. I can point to verses about how all of creation points to and echoes the fact that there's a creator. But aside from the transformation of the Holy Spirit, I'm not going to know that, right? It's the Holy Spirit that convicts me and chase. So like, there's all that. So I'm saying if I can't even say something that's universally understood to be true, it seems even more likely that I could one day as a believer get in trouble for stating something that's biblically true that I can't tether to some sort of fact. So yeah, I think we are just sliding very quickly down a really, really crazy and scary slide.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want to add, like, the language of the law itself too. How can you talk about perceiving a crime? How do you, you know, prove that somebody has done a crime when all that we care about is how that person perceives it? So, right. You know, the whole policy about innocent until proven guilty kind of just goes out the window.
Yeah. And then, I mean, and then just think of the ridiculous lengths you could apply a law like this. So what if sports fans of different, you know, football clubs over there, as they call them, but soccer teams, what if they were yelling at all these fans? I hate these fans. These guys are the worst, you know, and then it's like, that's a hate crime. Let's rack them up on this. You know, you could. I mean, I don't see why. If it's written that vaguely, you know, you can. And if they perceive it, as you're saying, I mean, it's just we're walking down this road where and it all starts from this thought that I think we've sort of let fester here and I guess over there as well, of just whatever I think is true and whatever hurts me is bad and needs to be punished, or things I don't like is something that harms me. That mentality and that victim mentality is just, it's breeding a generation of people who cannot handle differing opinions. And I guess the intention was to try to make the world a better place through all of this. Like, oh, we want to reduce hate. But I think what you're actually doing is you're making people more frustrated and more angry that they can't just say simply true things. And so you have the exact opposite effect. Now you've got people actually angry and frustrated and mad at you. And if you just let them speak their piece in the first place, they'd probably just move on from it. But they're just pouring gasoline onto a fire that they started.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the biggest problems with all of this, too, is this is not a universally applied rule, right? It's if it offends me, then that must mean that it's wrong. And that's the rule that culture has accepted. Except for if you're a Christian. If you're a Christian and it offends you, then you're the one who's wrong. But if anybody else is offended, then their right to be offended and what has been said to them that was offensive that's got to be illegal. We've got to outlaw that. But if you're the Christian, then it's like, no, actually just everything that you say is offensive. Anything we say to you is not offensive. And if it is offensive, you just have to take it.
Yeah. That is always the way that it seems to go. And it's Look, it's fascinating to watch, but also something that's really, as you said, it's scary. I mean, the path we're going down, and I know this one's in the UK, but obviously we're not far behind here. And in many ways, we're running alongside the race parallel with the UK and Europe on a lot of these sorts of language policing and things of that nature. So appreciate you putting that one on the radar today on the podcast for us, Madison. We're going to head on over to the main thing now, and CBN's George Thomas is in Ukraine, and he reported on the miraculous growth of a besieged church in Kherson, which grew from 100 to 500 plus attendees as God moves in the midst of a war zone. The details on that are today's main thing.
Kherson is a city under siege.
They are shelling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Many buildings here are destroyed.
Sadly, I've gotten accustomed to the explosions and destruction.
CBN News traveled to this front line in the south and found a virtual ghost town. Streets practically empty, homes left vacant. Most everything boarded up. 80% of Kherson residents fled more than 2 years ago. For Andrei Brynyov, a dentist who decided to stay back, it's been a constant struggle.
I have constant tension. When you go to work, when you go home from work, when you're at home, it's never ending and made worse when the explosions are nearby.
Yet it's in this extremely dangerous and volatile environment where Ole Derkinchenko feels called to minister.
My church to the Dnieper River is about 700 meters. The width of the river is about 700 meters. So the Russians are about 1.5 kilometers from us. And from there, they are bombing us very often.
The Dnieper River divides Kherson, with the left bank controlled by Russian forces and the right by Ukrainians. Derkinchenko's church sits on the Ukrainian side.
There are times when Russian shells fall 25 meters left of the church and sometimes 30 meters right of the church, but nothing touches us. God protects us.
Before Russia's 2022 invasion, Pastor Derkinchenko says about 100 people would regularly attend his Sunday services. Today, in the middle of a raging war and less than a mile from Russian forces, his church is overflowing.
Since Christmas of 2022, around 500 people, sometimes as many as 700 people, attend the church. We have a full yard of people on Sundays.
Kherson has seen it all: invasion, occupation, and liberation. And now, despite the danger of Russian forces possibly crossing the Dnieper River to retake Kherson, the church doors remain open.
2 years after the war started here in Ukraine, the church is thriving. This used to be an evangelical church, completely destroyed. A bomb fell on top. Look at the bullet holes, the shrapnel holes. Obviously, they're not meeting here, but instead, they meet every Sunday in this tent.
People understand that the church today is a center of hope and inner peace.
On a recent Sunday, several people professed faith in Jesus Christ and took baptism in a tub.
And just imagine, we even have people who come to the war zone just to visit our church from other districts. People often tell me that they feel calmer here in the church than at home, and it's only God's kindness.
Serving here is obviously not without risk.
The Russians know exactly where our church is. During the occupation of Kherson, literally 50 meters from here, there was a vehicle with Russian agents inside that were monitoring what we were doing in the church.
Andriy Skantsev, another Kherson pastor who stayed, spends his days with a small band of brothers delivering aid.
When the Russians were retreating, they began to shell the entire city, and one of the shells landed right here next to the church. You can see the damaged walls.
Pastor Skantsev says his church has also seen explosive growth.
Before the war, about 150 people attended the church, but after the start of the war, two or three times more people started attending the church. Some got baptized, converted to Christianity. We had twice or thrice the amount of people who got baptized during the war.
Most here know the Russians will have a tough time getting across the Dnieper River. That's because as they retreated in 2022, they blew up the Antonovsky Bridge, which Pastor Derkinchenko can see from his church office.
We are also praying that God can help our forces liberate the Russian-occupied territories on the left bank, because we have relatives and friends who live there.
For now, though, the daily bombardment continues, and the church stands in the gap for its people and nation.
Those people who decided to stay in this conflict zone are asking for help, and being here is extremely important, and to remain here is probably what it means to be a Christian, to show Jesus Christ.
George Thomas, CBN News, Kherson, Ukraine.
All right, George, thanks for that report there. Good stuff, as always, from George Thomas. That's going to leave us with time for one last thing on the podcast today. We're going to look at Proverbs 12, 1. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. And look, I just thought that was, as we're talking about people who don't want to hear of differing opinions from themselves, I just think it's an appropriate verse for today.
I like how this verse uses the word love here, because it just shows how important it is that we are constantly humbling ourselves. I mean, I think that's kind of what the word discipline implies. We have to humble ourselves in order to keep learning, to keep growing in our faith, and to keep seeking knowledge.
For sure. I think it's a good reminder to all of us to seek wise counsel.
Amen to that. All right. It's a good spot as any to leave it here on this Wednesday edition of the Quick Start Podcast. As always, make sure you're getting on over to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com for more news from a Christian perspective. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise on us, we shall return tomorrow with more. God bless. We'll see you then.